than the almighty dollar. And when your company is governed by a higher moral compass, then it produces more dollars.
I mean, you still see that not only the good guy come out ahead. I mean, the money, still the Chabad houses have to come onto the fry to support them. I mean, it's not so, you know, utopianistic that just do good and everything is going to work. I mean, you see, I mean, it's not working that way.
No, it does. The problem is, you see, the problem is like this. The problem is that the average guy with the Chabad house that has to come onto the gear. And I can tell you from my personal experience that this is the one, for me, the biggest problem with anything associated with fundraising. I have no problem approaching a totally fry guy and telling him that he has an neshama, that he's a beautiful person, and that he's connected to God, and he has a mitzvah. And I have no problem telling him that. But somehow, my own goals, because when it comes to mitzvahs, somehow still Torah and mitzvahs are still somehow loftier. It's still I'm still dealing with a higher reality. I'm still dealing with something of a higher reality. And therefore, when on the topic of Torah and mitzvahs, it's still easier for me to relate to his neshama, to relate to his innate goodness. The problem is that I still haven't brought down. So even it's still easier for me to experience Geula when I'm on the topic of Torah and mitzvahs than it is for me to experience Geula when I'm on the topic of money.
Copy everything.
because to bring the reality of Geula to something even lower, to bring the reality of Geula into Torah mitzvahs is still ultimately it in itself higher than the world to a certain degree. To bring the reality of Geula into money, for me, for the person personally, it's much harder to do.
That's what the shliach's doing better.
So in other words, so the shliach who could come to the friar Jew and tell him and present to the friar Jew an opportunity for him to express his neshama, the truth and the reality of his neshama through his money. Okay. The shliach himself has to not be looking at the money through Gola's eyes. That's to not be looking at his approach to that person. I'm a schnorrer, I'm standing here with my hand out. Oh, he must think I'm a schnorrer, he must think. In other words, what happens is, because I have the perception that he thinks I'm a schnorrer, that in itself makes me feel like such a piece of dirt. Even if on the outside I put on this, even if on the outside I take a fundraising course, and I learn how to sound smooth and this. But deep down inside, I feel like a piece of dirt. I feel like something that's just got stuck on the bottom of somebody's shoe. Okay? So because I feel that way, it's hard for me to really convey, even if I could do the right techniques and say the words, because I took that fundraising course, and I watched the fundraising video, and I read the fundraising book. Okay? It's hard for me to really convey that in truth if I don't really see it though.
But if
I would really concentrate on seeing the reality of money, that in my personal life I relate to money only as a means to reveal godliness in the world,
then you do wonderful. Then you do well with money.
Right. Then I could convey that to somebody else.
So any lacking of money in any shliach, mm-hmm. anybody is just looking mm-hmm. at it wrong. Period. Done. Mm-hmm. Reality. Mm-hmm. Over.
So the whole purpose, the shlichus of fundraising is. What's the shlichus of fundraising? The shlichus is also, fundraising is also part of the shlichus. The shlichus of fundraising is bringing the reality of Geula into money, into the lowest of all human types.
It might be a test though, and while you're doing bad, you still have to be content with doing that, that this is Hashem's will, but you try about it, and then you pass the test, and then you're doing well.
No more, Mashiach reality is that there's no more test of us doing bad, it's all, we're ready for the big deal.
Well, again, right. You know, it's part of the whole testing is that, you know, when you look at things from the Geula perspective, then there are no bad things in the world, and there are no tests, there are no nesenis, there are only situations in which you have to bring Geula.
Right. I mean, there's only situations.
It's only Geula.
Where you're still happy with
us. I'm saying there's only Geula. There's Geula. There's Geula in this situation. There's Geula in that situation. Everything that happens in your life is just another situation in which God is giving you an opportunity to bring the Geula into that situation.
Having the right mindset, having the right attitude.
That is a test. That's called a test.
What's no? A test means, Hasidus describes in the Sotah, what?
You just have to be makabel that reality.
Right.
You don't have to do anything.
Right. In other words, a test is only when you don't see the truth. When you can't see the truth, then you have a test, right? If you can see the truth, there's no test. For instance, the classic example that the Zohar gives for the Yetzer Hara, of the king who wants to test his son's loyalty, so he hires a prostitute to try to seduce him. So really, and he wants the prostitute to try as hard as she can. So the prostitute is serving the king by trying as hard as she can. But really the ultimate purpose is that the guy should not give in. The ultimate purpose that the king wants is that the son should not be seduced. Right? That he should have the character and the moral character and the personal integrity not to be seduced. And the royalty to be above such lowly things. So why is it a temptation for the son? But what happens if that son happened to be listening in on the conversation that the father had with the prostitute? And he heard the father hiring the prostitute. Would it be a temptation?
No.
It might. Why not?
It might be.
Why not? She still has the same. Not a temptation.
The only way it would be a temptation.
Not a temptation at all. Because he knows. He knows.
If it went so long that he forgot.
So he made the test.
Exactly.
Again, the test comes from him. The test comes from his perception of it. The test is not objectively.
So
there
back
are no
then, the test was from Hashem.
Objectively, there are no tests.
Before Geula, it was from Hashem the test, and now the test is from us.
It could still be a personal test if he questions himself.
Again, objectively, there are no tests. Tests are by definition subjective. So meaning that. From God's point of view, everything is godliness, everything is holiness. There are no tests. The test is only that from our perspective of reality, I could find myself in situations where I don't see how I could get out of this. Because I don't see how I can get out of this, so I'm being tested. And if I still, it doesn't matter, right? Like Avraham Avinu was going to that Akedah, and there's this river, this raging river in, appears in his way. And that's it. I mean, he has two choices, either walk into it or turn around. And he knows that he ain't turning around, so he walks into it. So he walks into it, he has no idea, as far as he knows, he's going to die. So all of a sudden, poof, the river, he goes in up to the south, and the river disappears. But when he went in, what makes it a difficult, what makes it a challenge is that you didn't know. What if he knew that as soon as he walks in and the water gets up to his chin, the water disappears, it wouldn't be a test. If he knew the result, it wouldn't be a test. It's only a test because he doesn't know.
But what's the difference now with tests that Geula already came?
Oh, when a person is living with the reality that the world is already in the Geula reality, so that means he's living in the reality that there is no such thing.
There's no test.
There is no such thing as a force which can successfully oppose godliness. Then such a force no longer exists. There are still forces which appear to oppose godliness. And which you can empower them to succeed if you choose to back down because you're fooled by the appearance.
But
I know from experience that there is no situation. If I know from experience that there is no such thing, right? If I went through one river and I went in up to my chin and it disappeared. Then I went to another river and I went in up to my chin and it disappeared. Then I went to another river. After a while, obviously, the next river I come to is not going to faze me.
So
because I've experienced, right?
Avraham Avinu was living with this reality.
He broke through. He was the first one to break through the beginnings of this reality by walking into that river.
And so everything walking until Geula, and everything till the Geula, they were all, they had tests, and they believed in the Eirish day, and they got through the test. Now, right.
we're supposed to reap the fruits of all those tests that everyone went through, including the tests that were in our generation. Sure. There were tests in our generation too. But we're supposed to put ourselves into a situation, and we still have tests, because we experienced them as such.
But
through the tests, we're supposed to come to the realization that there are no tests. We're supposed to go beyond tests. Tests are a feature of Golas. And we're supposed to go on to go
back then. They're just supposed to pass them, go beyond
tests.
To go beyond.
The reason why we still experience tests is because we have this tendency that even after we experience Geula, we run back. Even after we walked into one river and it went poof, and we walked into the next river and it went poof, somehow we come into the next river and we totally forget that we ever saw a river before. A river. Yeah, like so what? You know, been there, done that. Like, let's get on with things, you know. A river.
So, let me ask you a question. How does someone deal with, like, a Yetzirah and Geula reality? Let's say someone has talk about eating problem. They just love eating food, whatever. They have a problem with the Yetzirah. So you eat Tanya, whatever it says. What about, what's the shot in Geula?
The problem is the same problem. The problem is, how does, when a person has such a problem, what do they do? And I happen to know such a person well. What they do is like this. What they do is, because they grew up in Gauls, okay, so their perception of themselves is, I am weak. I am weak, I can't control myself, I can't. They've been sending themselves the message of I can't for many, many years. So because they've been, and that's their feeling, and that's the message they've been living with for so many years, they believe that. No. It could even be such a person who actually experienced times when he could. When he actually, you could have a person who actually experienced times that he successfully overcame it. And it was not only successfully overcame it, but he struggled with it every day. Successfully overcame it to the point that it wasn't even a big issue in his life. And yet, something else came up, and he reverted right back to the old way. And he takes that as proof that, you see, I can't. But it's wrong. We don't, but, you know, it's what happens is we look for proofs. When we look for proofs to back up our Golas mentality, the proofs are out there. Because superficially, when you look at the world is screaming Golas at the top of its lungs. The world is proclaiming Golas. If you look superficially at the world is proclaiming Golas. Decadence, perversion, corruption. The world is screaming Golas at the top of its lungs. You look at the world. If you're looking for evidence, for proof to back up your Golas mentality, you'll find countless. You'll find infinite proof to back up your Gaulish mentality.
But if you want proof for Gula.
Oh, the thing is, if you're looking for proof of a Gaul, for your Gula mentality, you'll find Daniel Tiger. See how all that other stuff is plus just reading the map.
And that's even easier than the Gaulish mentality.
Oh, in a way, it's easier even than the Gaulish mentality. In a way, it's hard. It's difficult because it's new.
Yeah.
And we're very resistant to change.
Yeah.
So, but again, that comes from us. That doesn't come. Objectively, it's not difficult. It's subjectively, I am resistant to change. So I am making it difficult.
But it's not difficult on its
own. In and of itself.
So Tanya doesn't apply anymore. That's what Shalom,
the person with the food problem, he thinks he's weak, right?
Right.
But you're saying really he has total control, 100% he can...
Not total control.
Really, it's not even an issue.
It's not even an issue.
Right, and that's how...
Really, really, it's not even an issue.
And that's how the...
In other words, if he had the mentality which said that really, really, it's not even an issue.
Right.
It's just a non-issue. You know, the fact is, we live in a time, if you probe by any such people, okay, a lot of this stuff is associated with fears of losing things.
Yeah.
Most people who are trying to grip and consume more than they need have fears of loss in their lives, in one form or another.
Can you repeat that last sentence?
Anybody who's struggling with a habit like overeating, like overindulgence, is usually because they have a fear of losing out on something. Right. They have a fear that tomorrow there won't be that somehow there won't be enough. Now, very often it's not the thing itself. It's somebody who had a major loss in their lives, or somehow people got message from their parents that their parents didn't have enough love for them, or their parents didn't have enough something for them. And somehow, what they're trying to do is they're generally reacting to some kind of fear of that if you don't grip as much as you can now, you're gonna be missing out on something. You're gonna lose out. The fact is, you live in a world today.
It's abundance.
The abundance that we experience makes these kind of fears. It's just objectively just a non-issue. Objectively, you know, people who went, but again, mostly, very often affects people who have experienced loss or great fear of loss early on in life, or people who lived in situations where there wasn't enough and there wasn't of something to go around in their lives that was important to them. And somehow they got the sense that you got to grab what you can. You know, that somehow grab more is better. And the fact is, the whole premise is just wrong. It's not, we're not supposed to be fighting. So most people, the world comes up with systems. How to deal with these things is through fighting with yourself. The truth is, the real way to do it is to put yourself in a state of mind where you realize that the whole thing is just not an issue.
But the Gula way of looking at it.
Right. Gula way of looking at it, the whole thing is just not an issue. There's going to be plenty today, there's going to be plenty tomorrow, there's going to be...
But before Gula, you'd fight Yitzhar, I don't want the food.
Right.
Oh yeah, now
right.
It's just let go, there's no Yitzhar.
Right.
So and that's, wait, one second, right. So, and so Tanya, this is the Alter Rebbe, is listening to you, it's talking to Yitzhar, like, yeah? what's Pshat? it's a new reality, see Pshat Gula?
Wait,
you see,
I don't want to bring you to such a question.
You're about the third guy. I've been speaking for years and years. You're the third guy to ask me this, which means that somehow, with all my talking, not too many people will catch on to what I'm really
saying. Rabbi Hamid, it's the same...
The point here is that, yeah. The point is here, yeah. It's a shocking concept. What the Rebbe is really saying here is, not that Tanya is obsolete. It's no longer applicable. Tanya has been realized. So... That's it. The objective of Tanya has been realized. So in order to understand and appreciate where we're holding, you still have to know what the Tanya says.
That's why we have chitas. We learn Tanya.
You have to know what the Tanya says in order to realize what we have accomplished.
If you only look at it as what we've already passed on, not we could be obeying. No, we are. We're tzaddikim.
In other words, we have to do it. But for us, we have to do what it says there to be a Bani, what it says there to be a Tzaddik. But for us, it's doable.
But he said,
because not for us, it's doable. It's done already, we just have to actualize
it.
And
that's we're already Tzaddikim now.
We already have access to what makes a Tzaddik a Tzaddik.
What they worked for years and years, it's at our fingertips.
Right. We have access to it, you just have to do it.
And so let's say learning Hasidus of previous Rebbeim, which it doesn't focus as much on Gula as the Rebbe's Hasidus. It's important to learn.
It's important to learn.
Because we have to see...
It's important to learn in order to understand what the Rebbe says.
But if we would just put a little...
That's how the Rebbe says.
The only reason why is, again, to learn all the previous Hasidus in order to understand what the Rebbe says.
And if we would just put a little energy into what they're telling us to do, we would actualize it. Like nothing.
No, not even that. If you look at it like it's done already. You just have to do it.
And that's what the Rebbe says.
In other words. Just like Begashmis, right? I walk into my house and I flick a switch and the lights go on. Okay? What went into this thing that the lights go on?
A whole dance of race.
Hundreds of years of science, of research, of work. There's massive generators that are pumping energy. It's all out there. Everything's out there. But until I put in a light bulb into the socket and I press the switch, I'm not going to get any light. So there's all kinds of tremendous history behind this whole... There's tremendous history, tremendous forces at work behind that little action that I do of flicking the switch. But me, all I have to do is flick the switch. It's all there. It's all there waiting to happen. The hundreds of years of history, the massive generators and the cables and lines and energies, and they're all waiting for me to flick the switch and make it happen.
So how much do we have?
But for me, it's nothing. In fact, flicking the switch is so nothing that 99.9% of the people never even thought about what's behind the switch.
But so many people are resistant to saying this because they're not used to this change.
No kidding, because it's a brand new concept.
To say we're already there, Tanya, we're there.
That's the whole point. The Rebbe says a person has to want and agree and publicize and proclaim that we're already there.
Well, when did he say 7 hours of sleep for a bucker?
What?
Did he say 7 hours of sleep for a bucker? When did the Rebbe say 7 hours of
sleep
for a bucker? When
do
you say?
Oh, I have no idea.
How much do we have to work within Teva? How much do we have to work within Teva?
He just said.
I mean, your whole issue of working within Teva is if Teva is a conflict with God. If, in other words, to you, And the problem is, to you, sleep is the opposite, it's just serving God, and then there's sleep, which is this necessary evil. Says who?
No, it's all in the fact.
Sleep is the time. In other words, if in your mind, sleep was the time when God reveals you Chiddush HaTorah in heaven.
That's not the problem. It's my rabbis, when I'm late to the class, they don't think sleep is the thing we have to do right now.
Well, because you're not being responsible in
so that's what I'm asking.
In allocating which hours you sleep.
So I'm saying the mindset. It seems everything is with the mindset that it seems like you can do certain things with the right mindset. So what's a mindset?
It's not you can do certain things. It's done already. You just have to flick the switch.
So that's a mindset, right?
In other words, I could take a guy, okay, pull him out of the deepest Congo, okay, put him in a house, and he'll walk around and he'll bang his head and he'll crack his knees and there has to be a death trap to him. Why? Because he doesn't know that there's this little switch on the wall that if you flick it up, the whole house is lit up. He doesn't know about the switch. Doesn't mean it's not there. So in his mind, he sees such a huge house, he's thinking how many pieces of wood he needs, how many trees he has to chop down in order to make the wood, in order to light a fire, in order to be able to see.
Right, so it's a perception, a very small...
So for him, in order to be able to see in this house, it's going to take a lot of work.
Okay.
First he has to go, he's New York, he has to go find the tree. He has to chop it down. Then he has to build a fire. Then it's a tremendous amount of work. I don't do that. I just flick a switch.
And once you flick the switch...
The problem is you don't know about it. So he's still living... I could put him into the middle of the modern age with the newest technology, but he's still living in the Congo. So they're never saying the same problem. I took people, I'm putting them into the new age Gula, and they're still living in Golas. They're still chopping down trees and building fires instead of flicking switches.
But after you put on the light switch, how much do you sleep for Seder? The light's on, okay, I don't sleep. You're going to be tired.
No, you sleep. You serve God with your sleep too.
7 hours.
Whatever it is, if you're serving God, what is you serve God with your sleep too?
But he's up now talking about Mashiach, and he's living with the light bulb. Tomorrow morning he's going to sleep with
God. The problem is you're not serving God with your sleep. The problem is you're puffing with your sleep.
Put the bulb in and flip on the switch.
Let me tell you something. I happened to wander into a Jewish chat room one day last week.
The what? Jewish what?
Chat room.
Yeah, okay.
And a guy sends me, he asked me a question.
What was Jewish about?
In my title, in my screen name, it says Rabbi. So he asked me, are you a real rabbi? So he sends me a question. Starts asking me questions. Then he sends me, like on a private,
message.
Instant message. He sends me. What do you do? What's this? What's about sleeping without a yarmulke? He's a Baltrova. He's living in Las Vegas, Nevada. He wants to know, like, what about a first he had been asking me what's the source of a yarmulke, blah blah blah. Then he asked me privately. He says, what about sleeping with a yarmulke? So he said. Is it okay if the yarmulke falls off and. So I said to him, the way I answered him was that as long as you go to sleep with the yarmulke, you should go to sleep with a yarmulke. You did the right thing. But he could tell from the answer that I was, he says, what happens if it falls off? Are you saying that it's... So I said to him, I said like this, I said, the more the yarmulke will become a part of you, it will become a part of your reality, you'll instinctively wake up when the yarmulke falls off. I said, I can't tell you you're obligated to wake up when the yarmulke falls off because you're not conscious of it. But I'm telling you that the more you become connected to the yarmulke becomes part of your reality, that's more often than not, you'll wake up when the yarmulke falls off. So he sends back to me, he says, you know something? He says, you're right. He says, I've had times that I woke up in the middle of the night, I realized the yarmulke is not there. And I felt this like panic, like I have to find the yarmulke. And as soon as I patted it on my head, I felt much better. So, the guy is a Baltshuva. So what's the word here? The word here is that if it becomes a part of you, okay, once that's your reality is that you're with the yarmulke all the time, so then you sleep differently too. Okay, the problem is, you do, in other words...
Getting there.
In other words, so I said to him, I guess Yiddish kind of creeps up on you. So he says, yeah, he says, not to mention it. He says, you kind of like, you know, you wake up one day and you realize that you're like, you know, you're a lot further in than you ever planned on getting, you know. But that's the word. If it becomes your reality, then that's your reality. The problem here is, the key issue here, you know, is the battlefield is, the battlefield is, and we'll see later in the Sikh, we'll see in the Sikh that the Rebbe talks about, we'll see later in the Sikh of Vayetze. The battlefield of Geula is in the up in the mind. It's all in your head. Whether you're in Galus or you're in Geula, is all in your head. And at the same time, it's all in your feet. The Rebbe says that Geula is when the hands, the head and the feet are on the same level. In other words, Geula, you only experience Geula when you realize it, when you perceive it, and you do it at the same time. You can't just perceive it because and not do it. You're not experiencing Geula. It's doing actions which doing things of Geula, behaving in a Geula way, and at the same time being Geula aware. That's it. That's what it's all about. To realize, and ultimately, that your head and your feet both are really all one and the same thing, and they all exist to reveal the truth of God in this world.
Pasha. He's up now talking about Mashiach and getting so excited, yeah? And talking tomorrow morning, Hassan is going to head down because he was up too late.
So the verse is like this. When Geula becomes your reality, then even in situations where if Hasidus Seder, okay, if that's your reality, if that's your life, if your life is other things, and Hasidus Seder is an additional burden that you have in your life, then when it comes to it, you're going to fall asleep. But if Hasidus Seder is reality, that's life. That is life.
Rabbi Helmut, what about if you're saying like people can be?
By the way, this is something that you don't even have to be a chassid to understand. I mean, yeah. This is something that even Misnagdish of Bali Musa will tell you. That if Tira is your life.
Yeah, but what's the mindset though? I'm trying there so was a certain, hard sometimes. There was a certain, it's just nature's. It's like the, I'll forget
the
about
Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim once saw a guy yawning. Chavetz Chaim once saw a guy yawning while he was learning.
Yeah.
And he said it's completely incomprehensible how a person could yawn while he learns. It's completely beyond comprehension how a person could yawn while he learns. Because you're really involved in what you're doing. When somebody's really involved in what they're doing, this is it. You don't yawn. You only yawn when you're kind of like distracted. Nobody who's really intensely involved in an activity is yawning. Even if he's tired.
I mean, if you say we have the ability to be on the level of a tzaddik in Tanya, right?
I didn't say that.
But previously you said the Rebbe has said.
Oh, the Rebbe said that.
Right. That's what okay. I'm saying. Now we just started Tanya again recently, and we're in these first 15 parakim, whatever. It says the tzaddik doesn't even have the reshima of evil with him. He doesn't have negative thoughts. You know, we're all sitting here having thoughts that aren't from Kedusha popping into my mind. How are you going
to
say that?
Because you expect to have them. Your expectation of yourself is that this is who and what I am.
You'll be a tzaddik gomer if you believe in yourself to be done.
You'll be a tzaddik gomer if you believe that God has made it accessible through the avodah of all the previous generations. God, through his emissary in this world, whatever, has made it possible for you that if you do what it says in Tanya, that a tzaddik gomer does, he spends time thinking, in order to become a tzaddik, he'll spend time thinking about how disgusting evil is and so on, whatever.
Yeah. Then you'll be very quick.
So how long does it take now?
Not by tomorrow morning.
With the switch.
Oh, how long does it take? Some people told me 20 years and all this. This is...
It depends if you have a 386, a 486, a Pentium.
So it's possible you can do
MMX
it.
Technology.
You can do it in a week. Yeah.
Everything's moving faster. The question is, you know what I mean? How up to date you are in Geula? That's all. I mean, how current and how up to date you are? You know what I mean? It's a process. Geula is moving. It's rolling. The Geula technology is hopping and popping.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you get an ISDN line installed, so you're
moving. An example here. We're living Geula. Should we have taken everything and just thrown it in the pot? Say Hashem.
There you go.
We're here with you, or that's
running away from Geula.
That's running away. Why?
Because Geula means that the whole world, that everything that exists in the world proclaims Holocaust. If you have anything to throw away, you're throwing
it
away.
He means to give a whole bunch of tzedakah, like sell all of yourself.
Let's say you're giving out all your stuff and empty it out of your bank account. You say, hey, I don't care, Hashem's going to bring it to me, it's Geula, it's everything.
Well, it depends. There were times when the Rebbe asked if people should empty out their bank account, so you're supposed to empty out your bank account. They say two people did it. The Rebbe once said, anyone who has a savings account, please empty it out and bring it to me. For tzedakah.
Yeah.
And they say two people did it.
I know another guy who would have done it here.
What?
I know another person in the community would have done it.
He's telling me he asked everybody.
If I have public covering and they've asked whoever has a savings account should empty it out and bring the money to
it. The whole place did it?
Mm. Not bad, too.
There's probably guys who did it without telling anybody. But not too many. Whatever it is, it's a handful of people.
And so, how do we know these days?
How do you answer his question? Then?
Which is what?
Should you? Why? If you have betachen.
No, what for?
That's a mitzvah that they need so much money, and you have that.
That's a way. One second. That's a way of completely rejecting the natural order of things. The thing is, if an opportunity comes up, the question is, should I increase in tzedakah? Absolutely, increase in tzedakah. What's the question?
So where's this thing of nature? Where's the breaks? How do you know when to give above nature?
When you will no longer feel the conflict. In other words, what you have to do is sometimes force yourself to go above nature. But the idea is that you're supposed to be trying to connect to the reality that there is no conflict between Kedusha and nature. When people live in a world where there is no conflict, then you know what to give and you know when to give it and who to give it to. There's no conflict.
But by giving, you can get to that point.
What's this called? Pidyon Shvuim? Pidyon Shvuim. Put this here in this now. We're living Geula. Conflict, not. Put it down to some example, tangible. Here's Pidyon Shvuim. Right. What does a person do?
The person should give money to Pidyon Shvuim. More than they could afford.
What's the they should give and the Geula they should give?
What?
What's the difference? I'm in Galus, I should have given. Actually, that was a Galus thing. Pidyon Shvuim was a time of the Poritz. That was a common tzedakah.
Right.
So now here is Geula, right? What's the difference?
It's a very rare tzedakah.
Okay, so what's the difference? So what's the difference in my way? Here's my the one I'm floating with. What's the difference in the way of Geula that I'm supposed to
give? The difference is how you relate to your money. If you relate to your money as something which is for you, for your needs, but you have certain obligations, and because you have those certain obligations, you're going to force yourself. Or also because you know that there's an Indian of tzedakah to give even more than you're obligated. So you're going to force it, even though you really want it for yourself and you need it for yourself, what you're going to do is you're going to force yourself to go against yourself and give tzedakah. That's what people did in Galus. And the Alter Rebbe says that is one of the main important avodas in Galus.
Right.
One of the most important avodas in Galus is giving tzedakah when you don't want to. That's what most of the whole fourth section of Tanya is about. Telling the chassidim about giving stuck when you can't afford it, when you don't want to, when you're more than you could afford, and so on and so forth. Breaking yourself to give stuck.
Okay.
When you're living in a reality where everything in the world exists for God, so there is no conflict. Money exists for the sake of serving God.
So whether you use it for Pidyon Shvuim, you're going to use it for Mitzvah, you're going to just get, it's just coming and going.
Use it for whatever comes up. You have an opportunity to Pidyon Shvuim,
if your tzedakah is
okay, so where do you give it? So what's the limitation? Why are you limiting?
Because you have other, in other words, because you have other obligations.
What was the difference between...
In other words, the thing is like this. The Friedrich Rebbe...
Panim Yafot, there was people in Galus that gave a Panim Yafot, the Sefer Panim Yafot, also the Tanya talks about.
Hold it. The Friedrich Rebbe was sitting in the middle of World War II, right?
Right.
And he makes a fund, which is meant to save lives from other people in Europe.
Right.
Now, but at the same time, he also raised money to build yeshivas in America. At the same time, he also raised money to send food to the Jews in Russia, and to send them matzah, and to send them other things. He also raised money to help marry off people in Eretz Yisrael. He also raised money to... So the question is, the mitzvah to save lives in Europe, people are dying, people are destroyed. So how could I do anything else? And he also spent money on buying a house here and on grocery bills and on helping other people out with their groceries. What groceries? People are dying. Yeah. The answer is, again, you do all that you can, you do more than you can. And Friedrich Rebbe went into tremendous debt for all of these things. You do what you can, you do more than you can. But you have to do all the different things that you have to do.
What was expected in Galus is not differently in Geula.
We're talking about a Rebbe, who always lived in Geula. Okay, so what was his reality? His reality was there's a lot of things that you have to do. So you do what you have to do as it comes up. You have to take care of this. Take care of this. You have to take care of that. Take care of that. You're living in a world of extremes. It's either this or that or nothing. You live with the reality of you do what you can. You have an opportunity. There's some money in here. Do you give it to that opportunity?
Sometimes you give a little. Galus, I didn't do the same thing.
In Galus, there's a whole different thing. The whole idea of Galus is breaking yourself. The whole idea of Galus is that I want it for me, and because I want it for me, the Eibush set up the world in a way that I have certain situations in where I could break myself and give it to someone else. The Eibush could really give it to someone else without me. Why did the Eibush make the world in such a way that the other person needs me so that I should break myself?
Okay, and then
In Geula, I see my money as just as much Shaykh to... If everybody would relate to their money as just as much to provide for the needs of other people as it is to provide for my own. That the money belongs to God and is only being given to me to do with it the things that God wants. So if everybody would relate to their money that way, there wouldn't be poor people.
When
you enter into that reality means you live with money. This money exists only to do what God wants. That's what it exists for. That's the reality of money. That's all the reality of money is.
So what are your priorities? Are your priorities first your family necessities?
Tell your family's for the
issue. So you look it up. So you ask it off. The shaykh list. I have a certain amount of money. What are my priorities?
The shulchan aruch.
What does God want me to do with this money? So you look, ask it off. You look at this. You look at different things. You look at Torah to find out what your priorities are with the money. But not because you could care less.
No.
To you, it's equally irrelevant. There's a guy who
can't. Because in Galus,
you cannot transcend your own selfishness. You could break it.
Geula started from the Baal Shem Tov. Midas of Torah started from God, from Geula. Midas of Torah, the idea that God gives me the money, it's not my money.
Everybody knew the idea. It was a philosophy.
It was a philosophy. But
One second. Extremely spiritual people were able to connect to that philosophical reality. But it wasn't the physical reality. The physical reality was that money comes from the poets. And that money is something you need money to survive. That was the physical reality. So the spiritual reality was it all comes from God. The physical reality is it comes from the ground.
Right.
Okay? And if there's a bad year and the ground don't give, you starve.
And they didn't daven.
One second. Of course they daven.
So what was the relation? Davening meant
again. Nothing? Davening was your attempt was you're trying to find a spiritual way to deal with the fact that the physical world was telling you that you're dependent on me. The point that the Rebbe is saying, the difference between today is that today the physical world, which we discussed this subject at length, of how the physical world relates to money while you were out, the physical world, right, you had gone out, so the physical world today, the Gashmius relates to money differently. The physical reality of money is different. I'm not talking about that it says what it said in the Svarim. It said the same thing in the Svarim for hundreds of years. And people who were very high spiritual people could live that way. But the facts on the ground said, the facts on the ground said that the honest man got buried and the crook lived a good life. That's what the facts on the ground said. The guy who played by the rules of the world had it good, and the guys who played by the rules of God had it lousy. That was the Metzius, right? The guy was fat and rich, and isn't the Jew was starving, and with all his davening, and with all his this, and with all that, he was starving. Okay? That was the reality.
Today
the physical reality is the exact opposite. Today the physical reality is the guy who's honest, the guy who has honesty, the guy who has integrity, the guy who lives by standards, the guy who lives by morality, he has it better. The guy who gives more tzedakah is better off than the guy who gives less tzedakah. That's the physical reality, and it's something that even the goyim admit to. And I just spoke a whole, what was it, a half hour, 45 minutes, on all the different ideas in the goyish world in business today. One of the things I didn't mention then was the union of charity. That one of the big emphasis on the and all the trainings that they give in the business world today is charity. That if you don't give back, you don't get. And even books which don't mention God, even books that don't mention the word God, say that nature, they call it nature. Nature is built in such a way that in order to get, you have to give. You have to give back to you have to give back to society. They're not working with God. You have to give back to society. You have to give back to this. Every book, I'll show you the biggest. 1 second. I'll show you the biggest financial experts on success say you should give money. Anthony Robbins, okay, $1 million an hour. You want 1 hour with Anthony Robbins, okay, as your personal trainer. Not $1 million, $1 million a weekend. So he'll give you I forget how many hours. $1 million he'll train you personally. The guy makes $100 million a year. Okay? And he is it when it comes to personal success. He says you must tithe your money. You have to give maisa to be successful. A guy. Gashmius, the Gashmius the world proclaims. I'm not telling you a Shulchan Aruch, I'm not telling you a Maimach Siddhas, I'm telling you a Grubber guy who, you know what he cares about? He cares, you know what he does for his spare time? He likes the racing cars and a guy! He's described, I read the one place he's describing about how the $10 million doors that he's putting on his mansion. Okay, I mean, this is what his asagas are. And he says, you cannot be successful without tithing, without giving my...
I'm following you.
What are you following?
We also gave my son in Galus.
Again!
But I got
again, you. Again, again, again.
You're going to enter the world, the real world, you'll see that in practicality, it's not so, it's not...
No. In practicality, it is. Your eyes are screwed up.
I know that.
1 second.
I know that.
The guy sees better than you. The guy sees better than you. He sees it. He makes money showing it to everybody.
Okay, that guy.
Not that guy. He's telling it to all the guys. He makes money telling it to guy. Guy, you pay him money to tell them to give mice. Think about that. A guy goes in, you know, at a week, you know, you come to a workshop, an Anthony Robbins workshop. $10,000, $10,000. You come, people pay thousands of dollars to hear this guy, to speak to this guy, to the thousands of dollars. so that he should tell them to give ma'aser, because it's good for you. Not because it's spiritual, and then you're refining your midas, and he don't know from nothing. He knows from the bottom line. Cash, is ma'aser good for you, or is ma'aser bad for you? That's all he knows. He don't know spirituality. Your mind still has ma'aser as a spiritual thing. It's a spiritual thing. You're learning Tanya, and Tanya says that how do you tap into the innermost essence of your soul by transcending your intellect, and how do you transcend your intellect by giving away your life, and money is your life. So it's all philosophy.
Not a big deal of
he don't know nothing. He knows, does it, when I give ma'aser, do I make money or do I lose money? That's all he knows, Gashmias. So that means that this guy is telling us, hello, Jews, the Gashmias of the world has changed. We don't. And not only does the Shulchan Aruch say this, not only does the Tanya say this, but the bottom line says this.
So bottom line, a Jew can't fail.
If he doesn't
fail. A Jew can't fail.
Sure he can. They do it all the time. Because they're right, because they look at the world in a screwed up way. They don't realize, they're looking there and go.
Mashiach, you can't fail.
So you go to your store, you talk about Mashiach, you do all these things, you go to buy properly, and basically you're not supposed to be freaking out if the cash flow is going to come in or not come in. You're supposed to say, hey, look, God, you want me to live, you're going to make it. Not that it's your problem. And then that's it, and I finish the end of the week, that's it. And the whole time, that's all you've got
to
be.
I mean, you have to try, you have to.
Try, I mean, what do you want us to try? Talk about Torah, you
can make a keli, b'gashmias.
What can I try? I can bring him in, I'm supposed
you try to do it right, and that's it, and then it's up to God. That's not your
Well, during that time, you're saying,
that's not your issue. What money
got about a person, about Yiddishkeit, so then what are you talking about? To try. To try was, you said the opposite. You said, here, you don't have to be into your work, like being
Hello, you're making it opposites. I'm telling you, they're not opposites. They're the same thing. Trying business and talking about Yiddishkeit.
You mentioned about people not putting trying, the radio at work.
Buying and selling.
Buying and selling, I got it.
Buying and selling, doing the things of business. And at the same time, doing Yiddishkeit are not a contradiction to each other. It's not, do I do this? Or do I do that? It's not. They're the same thing. They're serving God.
Right.
You serve God all the time. You know, it is nothing else. Because everything is God. Even the physical world knows that.
Putting on tefillin is the same thing as buying and selling.
Yeah.
That's it.
So a guy says he's going to stop.